Monitor now invites you to Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air, winner of every major award in its field. A public affairs presentation of NBC News. Today's guest will be James H. Meredith. We will bring you today's program in a moment.
And now again, on behalf of Bob and Ray's campaign for a transistor radio in every home, this is award-winning reporter Wally Ballou on the street. Sir, I notice you're carrying a radio there, listening to it very attentively.
Yes, I am. I
looks like kind of an antique to me.
Well, it's pretty heavy. It's an old set.
It is.
Yeah. It takes a couple of big batteries.
Uh-huh. What do you like?
It's good. It stands up well. I've had it for years. Oh,
wonderful.
20 years.
Wonderful. What do you like to listen to? Anything particular?
Oh, news, music. Here, I'll turn it up. Listen.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's music. Thank you.
Yeah, that's music.
That's music.
Right.
Uh-huh. What else?
Well, news, as I said, and I like telephone programs where people call in and like that.
Uh-huh. A little bit of everything, in other words.
Rock and roll and everything.
You know what I'm always reminding folks, that whether it's for entertainment or emergency, a transistor radio is a must.
Well, I got to go to a quiet spot now. This set is so old, I listen to Stella Dallas every day.
Help keep our waterways clean. Help keep America beautiful. Our lakes and streams and rivers and even the ocean are much too full of floating litter and submerged trash. Litter fouls propellers, spoils boating fun. It snags fish lines, costs tax dollars too. Always carry a litter bag in your boat. Always dispose of trash in a proper receptacle. Remember, every litter bit hurts you. Keep our waterways litter free. And now Meet the Press. Today's guest is James Meredith, who will resume his march through Mississippi next week. Our panel consists of Lawrence E. Spivak, producer and permanent panelist, Wallace Terry of Time Magazine, Haynes Johnson of the Washington Evening Star, Claude Sitton of the New York Times, and Herbert Kaplow of NBC News. Our moderator is Mr. Spivak.
We'll have the first questions now from Herbert Kaplow of NBC News.
Mr. Meredith, some civil rights leaders recently have expressed concern not only about the attitude of whites toward Negroes, but of Negroes toward whites. Are you concerned about that?
Yes, I don't know if I know exactly what you mean. I don't know exactly what you mean.
It's a feeling that maybe Negroes are trying to read whites out of the civil rights movement, and that eventually, if the Negro civil rights fight is won, that there will be no common meeting ground because the two groups will become so estranged.
You know, I don't really think that's the issue. I think the question is that the old civil rights movement has now come into competition with what I would call the Negro movement. Now, my view is that on the civil rights movement, that's everybody's business. And everybody should always do their part and be a part of the planning and of all other aspects. But as far as the Negro movement is concerned, that is the Negro community itself and the group itself, doing things to make itself whole, as I say. This, I think, should be left primarily to the Negro, as it has been to all other ethnic groups, to the Jews, to the Italians, to the Irish, and so forth.
Well, you have heard the term black nationalism come up in the last couple of weeks. Are you concerned about that being too exclusive?
Well, I don't know what this means, and personally, I've been watching television, and I think you're talking about where they have this slant, black nationalism. No, black power, that's what it is. Well, now, to me, that is the same as the rally cry, say, in Africa of Uhuru, in America of freedom, singing We Shall Overcome. And to me, I just thought that this was just another version of the significance of black nationalism, if it has any significance, I don't see it yet.
Let me ask you a related question. This business of nonviolence, you subscribe to the general concept of nonviolence?
Well, of course, you know, I grew up in Mississippi, and I spent 9 years of my life in the military. And has been great point of significance between myself and the mainstream of the movement. Now, personally, I think that the nonviolence is fine, but I don't think it can ever go far enough. I think this country has a particular character of its own, and I think that all other peoples, groups in this country, have followed a certain pattern, and I think the Negro will have to follow this same pattern in obtaining his rightful place in the system.
We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Sitton.
Mr. Meredith, do you think whites are making a contribution by participating in the march in Mississippi?
Well, most definitely. if you recall, the very first few blocks, there were only four of us, and the other three were white. I think definitely that the whites have a place and that they're making a contribution.
Tell me, should whites who contribute their time and money to the civil rights movement also be given a voice in its leadership?
Very definitely in the civil rights movement. And I think everyone has a place in the civil rights movement. The Negro movement is a different question. But you're talking about the civil rights movement, definitely.
Well, would you say the march in Mississippi is a part of the civil rights movement?
yes, I broadly I would say so. Now, the main purpose of the march, of course, was to point up and to challenge this fear that is so much a part of the American system, so much a part of it until we all live it and we all are somehow unconscious of it. And this is the main purpose, of course. And that certainly should be a matter of concern for this whole country.
Well, Mr. Meredith, if whites and Negroes cannot work together in the Negro movement, the black movement, or the civil rights movement, is it possible that we can have an integrated society, finally? Do you think it can be achieved?
I thought I said they could work together. And not only could, but should. But I think that there are two sides, as I point out in my book. There are two important sides to this racial question in this country. The one side is what the Negro has to do. The other side is what the general society has to do, which includes the whites and the government. And I think that the two are separate. I think that there was much that the Italians had to do, that the Italian community, the Irish community, the Jewish community. I think the Negro community has to do these things. And I think only the Negro community can do it. Such things as building pride in the community, in the family. And these type things. I think only the Negro can do. And this is the one side. On the other hand, because of our minority status here, I think that the Negro can only ever go so far in this country as the general society will accept and permit. Mm-hmm. And that this is what the general society has to do, is determine that it will accept and that it must accept.
Well, many feel that one goal of integration is to get away from the idea of strong racial consciousness. You don't necessarily agree with that.
Well, unfortunately, in Western civilization, because of our history of slavery and so forth, we cannot get away from the racial issue. We would much like it, but I don't believe at this time that we can forget about it. It's just too much a part of us.
Mr. Terry.
Mr. Meredith, you have been described as a loner. So it came as no surprise that you began your march without the help of any organization. But what persuaded you to let Martin Luther King and Stokely Carmichael and others take it over during your convalescence?
Well, Mr. Terry, I think that the biggest misconception of what I hope for and stand for is the laboring of me as a loner, as an individualist. What I believe, as far as the Negro in this country is concerned, is that in order for us to arrive at where we need to be, everyone, every important aspect of the society has to take part. No one can be left out. So my idea is that there has to be something found that everyone can tie to. And this is what I look for.
Well, some of the civil rights leaders who are leading the march now and taking an interest in foreign policy today, I wonder if you agree with them when they say that the United States should withdraw from Vietnam because the war effort is hurting programs for Negroes at home.
Well, of course, here there's a division that has to be made. Now, if they're speaking as individuals, then I think they should say anything that their conscience tells them. Now, there have been efforts to tie our foreign policy in with the civil rights and the Negro and racial question. I think that's a big mistake, because I'm a soldier. I spent most of my adult life in the military, and there's just no connection between the fighting of a war on the orders and of civil rights, in this case, a racial problem in the country.
Well, I wonder if you agree with some of the other objectives of those who are leading the march now. Roy Wilkins and Whitney Young refused to sign Dr. Martin Luther King's manifesto, which criticized the federal administration, demanding that President Johnson send 600 voting examiners to the South, and also demanding that billions of dollars in aid be spent to help the Negro in this country. Do you support this manifesto?
Well, I saw nothing wrong with this manifesto. It was brought to me not for my approval or for signing, but just to let me know what was being done. And I was told about the difference of opinion. It was acceptable to me as it was, and it would have been acceptable to me had it been acceptable to the one on the furthest to the right and the furthest to the left, because I saw it primarily as just sort of a philosophical jumping off place. And what I'm interested in is a solution to the problem.
Have you signed it?
I was not, it was not desired that I signed it.
Would you sign it today?
Personally, I don't even consider it significant enough to even be discussing. What is significant is the issue. And that is that the governor of the state of Mississippi and the other officials of Mississippi, as well as some of the federal officials, are not meeting their responsibility. They're not responsive to the Negro. They don't. They just ignore the Negro. That's the issue, not whether Negroes are fighting with themselves. I could care less how much they fight with themselves. They have a privilege of differing. But I think the time now is to get back to what the real issue is.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Meredith, on this question of the Negro leadership and the differences between the Negro leaders and the civil rights movement, you have written and referred to several times what you call your divine responsibility and your divine mission. What do you mean by that?
Well, of course, I know you're referring to my book. Of course, I think every writer thinks it's unfortunate that everyone hasn't read it. I certainly think that. Now, that is much misunderstood. What I mean, and my basic philosophy is laid down in the book. Now, but what I mean by the divine responsibility is this. I think that everyone who becomes aware of a thing that is not right in a society, I think human civilization should always move forward, as ours is, especially in the technical and scientific fields. But even in the human relation areas and the social relations areas, it should always move forward. And those who see what's wrong with the society have a responsibility to correct it. I think I see many things that are wrong with our society. Consequently, I have a responsibility that is beyond my control to carry it out. But I don't feel it just for me. I feel it for anyone who knows. I think they have a responsibility to see that the new and desired order is brought about.
Do you consider yourself any different from the other Negro leaders, such as Martin Luther King, Floyd McKissick, Roy Wilkins?
Certainly, how the thing should be done has a difference. I mean, as one of the, I've only met Dr. King in the hospital. We spent a number of hours together, and a good bit of this time was spent in discussing and trying to come at least to some temporary agreement on the differences. There's no question. I think that this country, well, nonviolence is a fine thing, so far as it goes. But I will never be able to buy a position that if a Klansman has got a party up and we know about it and he's going somewhere to kill a bunch of Negroes, I could never advise them to stand there and turn the other cheek. I mean, this is just not This is not reality. It's certainly not reality in the South and Mississippi.
Mr. Meredith, I'd like to ask you a question. There are a good number of people who believe that your Mississippi march has been taken over by other leaders and used for their own purposes. How do you see your role in the march when you return to it?
Well, I think that is very much a misconception. In the first place, everybody has to satisfy his own conscience. Now, all of the men who came to see me were Negroes. Now, as far as I'm concerned, anything that affects one Negro affects another. And every one of these people had an equal responsibility to remove the fear and whatever other obstacle that was in our way. So, consequently, no one could possibly have attempted to take anything from me because it was not mine, it was ours. And I have really felt close to the people who have been down there. I know Mississippi is rough. It's rough for a small group, and it's certainly rough for a big group.
Well, when you started this march, none of the leaders came along with you. Now, are you going to join them? Are you just going to take a place in the march? Or do you plan to go back and lead the march once again as you did when you started?
Well, that's not true. This is again to this loan a bit. Now, I had thought about and planned for this effort to bring out this underlying fear for at least 7-8 years. Over the past 2 years, I'd written hundreds of letters to the governors of the states, Senator Eastland, everybody, including most of the Negro preachers in that state. And what we were hoping for was a spontaneous thing. I knew that by the time we reached Jackson, not only most all the Negroes in Mississippi, but most all the Negroes in this country would be genuinely concerned and a part of that effort.
Mr. Kaplow.
Are you satisfied with the way the march has been going?
My satisfaction, of course, depends on the people affected, in particular in this case, the Negroes in Mississippi, and what's going to happen to them after the others have gone. Now, there has been some apprehensions on the part of these people. I've been very much in touch with them, and many people have wondered, what's going to happen when this big force with the press leaves? And, of course, I'm very concerned with that. Over the past week, I've talked to most all of the Negro leaders, and most of them tell me that they are at this point very satisfied with the march, and that satisfies me.
You think enough people have been registered?
Well, with the shooting, of course, this changed many things. I believe that had things gone on from where I started, I believe by the time we reached Jackson, we would have registered 200,000 Negroes. I understand now there are only about 2,500. But that's a thing that we can never know.
Miss Meredith, you said that you would never again walk through Mississippi unarmed. Does this mean that you'll be armed when you rejoin the march next week?
Well, I think that a man should never be helpless.
Does this mean that you'll be armed then?
Well, I think that certainly every step should be made. A person is responsible for himself, for his life, his welfare, and for that of his family. Now, there are many factors here. I've written to the governor of the state of Mississippi, and the governor has ignored me and all others. Now, the governor of Mississippi and the leaders of this country are not going to continue to ignore me and other Negroes. That just is not going to continue. Now, Mr. Chief Marshal McShane called me in my hospital, and he said that he wanted to walk by my side when I went back. Of course, he
as the acting as Chief Marshal.
That's Chief Marshal James McShane. Now, this was him speaking, and of course, whether or not he'd go will depend on the Attorney General and the President, and I doubt that they'll let him. But if he went, and there's someone there that I know is prepared and is capable of handling any situation, that's another matter. But I think that people have a responsibility to be prepared to look out for the welfare and safety of themselves and their family.
Mr. Terry.
When you began your march, you said you were sick and tired of Negro men hiding behind their women and children in marches and demonstrations. Well, now in this march that's proceeding towards Jackson, there are children involved. What do you feel about this?
Well, I feel that there's even a greater responsibility for the men of the community and the men around and concerned to make sure that these women and children are looked out for.
I see. Then you're changing your position. You feel their presence is all right.
Well, this was one of the points of discussion between Dr. King and myself. And,
I see.
Yes.
Back here in a minute, Mr. Cherry. Mr. Johnson.
Yes, I don't want to belabor this point about the being armed or not, but it seems to me an awful lot of people in this country are very concerned about this, Mr. Meredith. And when you went down there, you said you chose to carry a Bible instead of a gun. And now if you go back, I'm not clear from your answer, Mr. Sitton, whether you, in fact, do intend to carry a weapon with you, or whether you urge other Negroes to around this country to be prepared to defend themselves.
Well, I think that the responsibility for the maintenance of peace and order is with the government. It starts with the local government, it goes to the state government, it goes to the United States government. All of these people have refused to take this responsibility. Now, I think that we as citizens of a nation have to see that peace and order and the safety of people looked out for. And when these people fail, then the ones who are affected then have responsibility, and I never will relinquish that responsibility.
Are you suggesting that you should then be prepared to take things into your own hands, the Negroes?
Certainly, if all of the other responsible agencies fail to do so, there's no choice.
And you feel that the responsible authority of the government has not
They have indicated clearly that they will not accept the responsibility.
Mr. Meredith, you were quoted as saying that your march into Mississippi was the first of six steps you planned to take. Can you tell us something about the other steps you plan to take in this fight?
Well, you'll have to read my book, 3 Years in Mississippi, Mr. Spivak, if you haven't already. I think it's all clear there, but I don't know if I could go into it here because it would take too long.
Mr. Kaplow.
Mr. Meredith, I'd like to just clear up 2 points here. Are we right in understanding that as things stand now, you're dissatisfied with the amount of protection you'll be given, and therefore when you return, which we understand would be sometime next week, you would probably go armed?
Well, the governor of the state of Mississippi, I saw him on television saying that he was not going to protect the people. I wrote him. He didn't answer me. And it's clear. The Federal Bureau of Investigation was close enough as you to I and watched this man shoot me. They did nothing. The state people were there. They did nothing. The local people were there. They did nothing. Now, it's pretty clear what the situation is.
We have less than 2 minutes, gentlemen. Mr. Sitton.
Mr. Meredith, some have said, Joseph Brow being one, that the responsibility for your shooting rests squarely on the doorstep of the FBI. Do you agree?
Well, no. The FBI didn't invent the racial problem in this country. They came much later. This country, whether we like it or not, is based primarily on the theory of white supremacy, not just Mississippi, this whole country. Now, at some point a few years back, there were people in this country who thought we had to change this. President Truman, I think, being one. And this process was started. And I think officially we've gone a long way. But with the general public, we still have a long way to go in changing this basic doctrine of white supremacy, which most Americans, black and white, still really believe in.
Mr. Terry.
Mr. Meredith, as you wrote in your book, 3 Years in Mississippi, do you still believe that you can stop a mob by lifting your hand and that you cannot die because you have a divine responsibility?
Well, you know, I started to go toward this man when he started to shoot me, but somehow I changed my mind. Now, I don't know why I changed my mind. And, of course, there's much more meaning to that statement than one would see offhand. Of course, I do believe that the perpetuators of responsibility of seeing that humanity is brought about better, if they have a program, it does live on.
Mr. Johnson.
Do you believe that the march in Mississippi has brought about any meaningful change in that state as far as race relations go?
Well, the people there tell me that it is setting a groundwork, and I think this groundwork can be used to bring about a change.
I think on that note, we're going to have to end. Our time is up. I'm sorry to interrupt, Thank you, Mr. Meredith, for being with us today on Meet the Press.
In a moment, we'll tell you how you can get a copy of this week's Meet the Press interview.
Frank Blair here, about to take over as your monitor host. We've got a special treat in store for you. Listen.
This is Bing, whatever happened to Bob Hope Crosby, with greetings to the program that could be subtitled The Road to Everywhere, Monitor. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Monitor. Happy birthday to you.
Monitor has completed its 11th year and has begun its 12th. Like all years, Monitor's 11th was a bright one, with plenty of conversation with interesting people who had something funny or perceptive to say. Besides Bing Crosby, you'll hear Bob Hope, Phyllis Diller, Jack Benny, Jimmy Durante, Barbara Streisand, Cassius Clay, Betty Davis, Barry Goldwater, Alan Sherman, and President Lyndon Johnson. How's that for an all-star lineup? They'll all be with us for a special review of Monitor's 11th year this evening. That's Monitor's 11th year. And in Monitor's 12th year, Ronald Reagan, actor and candidate for governor of California, tells what it's like to watch himself on old movies on television.
Sometimes as I sit there, I think it's like looking at a son you never knew you had. I've got one friend who stays up to look at his old pictures just to watch his hairline recede.
Ronald Reagan has other things to say about an actor running for governor. Listen to him on your best weekend source of information and entertainment, Monitor.
For a printed copy of today's Meet the Press interview, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, M-E-R-K-L-E, Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C. You know, the world is rapidly becoming every man's oyster. New and better means of travel and communication are turning the world into one large and beautiful city. Experts tell us the coming decades hold even greater opportunities for travel and discovery. And you can be a part of this exciting era if you plan ahead with United States Savings Bonds. Bonds are better than ever now, paying 4.15% when held to maturity. So sign up to buy them regularly through the payroll savings plan where you work. Only 63 cents a day will buy a $25 Series E bond each month. When your bonds reach maturity, now in only 7 years, they'll be worth $4 for every three you invest now. 40 months of payroll saving and you'll have bonds worth $1,000 at maturity, even more if you hold them longer. So start today to get in step with the thrilling world of tomorrow by buying the new improved United States Savings Bonds where you work or bank. For 25 years, the star-spangled savings plan for all Americans. Meet the Press will be heard again next week at this same time, when the guest will be Undersecretary of State George W. Ball.
Hi, this is Bill Cullen. Chet Huntley, Arlene Francis, Frank Blair, and I are heard each weekday on Emphasis on NBC Radio.